there's just enough chill in the air, some dust, and some diesel exhaust, but I love it because it means it's harvest time. The bins are all cleaned out, or at least they should be. The service techs are all highly caffeinated, and it's time to get to it. And we're coming along for the ride. Welcome to the Harvest Trail Podcast, where we're going to meet up with the heroes of the harvest and tell their stories, in hopes that when we're done, we're all a little smarter. And now to the show. And welcome back to the Harvest Trail Podcast. We are joined by Andy Myers. Andy, where are you at right now?
Right now, I'm in a truck taking a load of corn to town, and we are in the very northeastern corner of South Dakota.
And how is harvest going up there right now?
Good. Corn harvest is winding down right here locally. Corn is dry. We're dumping 15% corn coming out of the field. The crop, we struggled getting planted last spring. A lot of prevent plant locally. And then it just turned off, the rain did. And so our crop is probably, slightly below average. It's not a disaster by any means, but we had all hoped it would be a little better.
And it's coming out super dry.
Yeah. No, we've had excellent conditions. For last fall, we fought a lot of mud here locally. Lots of guys were putting tracks on everything to get harvested. And this fall, you could just drive a truck wherever you want, load them out in the middle of the field, and drive them out of the field. Yeah, it's just the total opposite of what we fought a year ago.
Wow. So, now, what's your crop mix that you did this year in terms of corn, beans, and anything else?
Our personal farm, we're 50-50 corn soybean rotation. Mostly, I shouldn't say 50-50, we end up with a little bit of corn on corn occasionally just because of the way the fields lay out and so forth. And then we have like 20 acres of alfalfa because we finish about 300 steers every year too by 5 weights and finish them. So.
And you feed them out on the alfalfa. Do you feed them into your corn as well?
Oh, yeah. Shell corn, distiller's grain, and alfalfa, a little bit of prairie hay too. This is what they call prairie pothole country, so there's some ground that just cannot be farmed.
Yeah.
And that's either hay ground or pasture or, where the cattle are. So, but ours, we buy the calves at 5 weights and put them in a dry lot setting and finish them. So.
Now, you finish them on high moisture corn as well, and do you grow and harvest that?
No high moisture corn, just dry corn.
Yeah. So. Well, this year you may not have a choice, right?
Yeah, it was actually the first load we picked was like 17%. So it, that boat came and went very quickly this fall. So
now, if I understand correctly, you're in a new combine this year. How's that worked out?
I am. We got a new S98 gleaner. It's been good. We had a couple of minor startup things, but they come and took care of them, and that's normal. That's new. That's new machinery. You buy something new and there's always a glitch, but they were took care of us, got us running.
Had you been in Gleaner before, or did you come from another brand?
So fun fact, this is my family's 50th harvest with Gleaners.
Oh, wow.
My grandfather bought the first, started with a Gleaner G in 1973, and we've had G's and L2s and R50s and R72s and R75s and S77s and S88s and S98s, and we've kind of had them all.
Now, so, is this your first S9 series with the new cab, or have you had a few before this one?
Nope. This is our second one. We had a new one last year as well. We got a new one this year, and actually we got a new one coming for next year as well.
Oh, wow. So, wow. Well, sounds like a proven, it's got a proven track record on your farm.
Yeah, we've done really well with them. Like I tell people, when people pick on us cleaner guys, and I just don't know any better, I guess. And we've paid for lots of ground with them, right? They work. We know how to fix them. They're simple. We really like them.
Well, they can laugh all the way up until they see the results. Or when they pay the fuel bill, right?
Right.
Then who's laughing?
We it's and capacity wise, I mean, these S98s, we got 12 row 3312C on this one that's what we're running now, and you know, 30,000 bushels of corn a day is a good day.
Yeah,
you know, we don't do
yeah.
that every day, but that's doable. We do that.
Well, so. And you know, most people, that's the for the majority of the farming world, that's the top end capacity of their ability to take the grain away from the field, anyways.
Right.
And so somebody going out there thinking that they're going to best that tremendously and investing hugely to pull it off is really on a fool's errand, because, you know, trucks are expensive, buggies are expensive, labor is expensive, and going up, the combine should never sit still. If the combine is sitting still waiting on the rest of the system, you're just wasting money. So,
right.
It sounds like you've got the right size for what you're doing. What tractor you got out there pulling the buggy?
Well, we got I got two grain carts, and we got a MT855 pulling a 1600 bushel grain cart.
Nice.
And then we got a MT765 pulling a 1000 bushel grain cart.
Busy. So. But you got a busy a lot of work going out there. Now, how did you get stuck with the truck?
We never wonder, well, we do. There's some days we wonder what we should do today. We never wonder if there's going to be something to do.
There's always something.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get in the truck and not the combine?
I don't, my brother's running the combine and, he just picks the corn.
That's his thing.
I don't know. In his mind, if he's not picking corn, it's not getting done. And
it can't be done but him.
and he's kind of, so I babysit the dryer and I got a guy doing tillage too and make sure the trucks are all running and everybody's got fuel and all those things. But he runs a combine, and once the corn goes on the cart, he doesn't care what you do with it. Just get rid of it and get me an empty grain cart back.
There you go.
So
he knows his job and he does it well. So did
he does.
In the field this year, in the fields that you farmed, walk us through kind of your process. Did you try anything new? Did your seed salesman come to you with wistfully promises of big dreams? did you change up your nutrients? What was this year like?
I guess we didn't do any major changes this year. We are a Bex dealer, so that is part of our operation as well. Just hang tight with me. I gotta get yelled at the elevator here and get my tarp open. So a little bit of a story. We pull trains. So out here in South Dakota, we can hook multiple semi-trailers together, and we do that. And
how many are you pulling right now?
Go ahead.
How many are you pulling right now?
Two. I got major first world problems. My electric tarp remote won't reach my rear trailer, so I got to get out and click the button to get my rear tarp to roll.
Hey, we'll wait on you. We'll wait on you. Go do it.
Well, I'm back in the truck.
You had a good idea with your seed program, what you wanted to do. You know, Bex is a incredibly sophisticated organization, and
so we split our fertilizer. We spread. We have ground here that gets sandy. CECs of like 7.
Yeah.
So then we top dress a bunch of corn, and then this year we flew fungicide on.
Really?
And we've done some in the past. But we did about, I suppose half the corn, maybe a little more. And we were very, very pleased with those results this year. Seen big paybacks on that. So.
Well, that's excellent. You know, one of the downsides of fungicide, not that there's a lot, but one of the downsides is we see some of this plant material not breaking down as much as we'd like. And it can complicate our tillage integration of that plant material. However, you know, particularly of late, we've seen a lot of people get big boosts from fungicide across a lot of crops. Across a lot of crops are getting benefits.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. In our soybean program, there's two fungicide applications just built into that. That's just how we do the soybeans. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So
do you had it flown on the corn? How'd you put it on the beans? Do you do it at the same time, or obviously use different products? But how did you do it?
The first fungicide application happens with our we spray the beans around the 21st of June. Just proceed to pit three. Okay, just wait. I had to make sure I go to the right pit here.
You don't want to be dumping in somebody for somebody else.
When we're spraying the soybeans for weeds, we put a fungicide in for that. Then, because we're making the pass, and then around August 1st, we make a second pass of fungicide. And then usually, insecticide goes in the tank at that time too.
Yeah.
And we've had good results from that too.
That is excellent news, particularly for the people who are listening who are wondering what programs to get involved with fungicide. We're hearing more and more interest in fungicide as a good solution. And you know, one of the things as well is we're seeing some of these applicators be better prepared for the application of fungicide and being able to get up above certain crops with the, you know, now these machines that'll go up, or the high machines that'll go out there. There's you may not have to always fly it on in the future.
Right.
Any playing with cover crops out there? Have you looked into that as part of your nutrient or soil health building program?
So we did plant. We ended up with the Prevent plant this year. We did cover crop all of that. I did not go high end on my cover crops. We just used some wheat, then run wheat actually, mainly because then we sprayed. We did that right there the first part of July, just spread it on with the floater. And some of it were worked in, some of it just happened to get a shot of rain out right after we did it. And the reason we just used wheat instead of some of these exotic concoctions was then in August we sprayed it with 2,4-D to kill the water hemp.
Okay.
Because we needed to keep that under control. Where if you use these exotic things, you had no way to take care of the water hemp.
Well, and you still have that organic matter. You still have that root matter holding soil in place. You're still getting a lot of the advantages. You're just not
right.
You're just not shelling out a lot of the money and all the extra things that, I mean, you're still getting a tremendous number of the advantages. The
right.
One thing I did want to ask you about is your, you know, grain infrastructure strategy. Are you storing on farm? I mean, right now you're hauling to the elevator right now. What's been your strategy for, are you hauling some of it directly to, I don't know if you have ethanol plant up there or so. Where are you taking it?
We have locally a very, so we store about half. I got room for about half at home. And we're hauling the other half to town because I've got to get rid of it, obviously. We have two very good ethanol plants locally, and then actually the elevator I'm hauling into right now is a unit loader. So that corn goes, if it's some of it, they sell the ethanol plants, but then they load unit trains here that go to the West Coast.
That's fantastic.
And we are what I would call the edge of the PNW rail line.
Okay.
You don't have to get much, 30, 40 miles east, and then the train goes east, not west.
Huh.
So we are kind of right on the edge of it. When they got into, I'm not going to get political because I don't, it's not no, here or there.
You but can go anywhere you want.
Soybean stuff. Well, when they talked about the soybean basis changing when we were fighting with China a little bit,
yeah.
That affected our basis immensely here. Like $1.50 was our basis under.
Goodness.
And we're kind of the edge of that. You get to the south and the east a little bit more, and then the crop goes east to the river and then goes south when you go to the export markets. So,
well, you know, not to be political, but we've had some a variety of issues affect the price of our nutrients. And right. I wonder, with you having a finishing operation, are you producing enough manure to make a major impact in your nutrients? How does that work? Or have you looked at new ideas?
We're not even close. Yeah. So we finish 300 steers and we farm about 5,000 acres. So
it's not going to work. You've got enough for the garden.
Not even remotely close to enough to do anything.
You've got enough for the sweet corn patch.
Yeah, right. So we typically cover an 80 acres every fall with manure. And it helps. It's but I look at it more as a just a way to build that farm than okay, now we're not going to fertilize this farm. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, we've heard of folks trying all types of new ideas, doing a strip till and then injecting manure down into the strip. I haven't heard the results for this season yet, but interesting ideas to try to mitigate those nutrient prices. What is your sense and feeling for nutrients in the next 12 months?
Well, I don't expect to see drastic changes in nutrients either which way. I don't expect things to go down. I don't expect things to run from where we are here. With that being said, we bought a large portion of our next spring's N nitrogen needs in July. We kind of had a dip there, and I'm not going to pretend we're super marketers. We just felt it was a price we could live with, so we bought. I have not bought our P&K needs for next year. Probably should have. That being said, corn is like $6.50 or $7, so I'm not real excited to start cutting rates.
Yeah.
I don't play that game where I wholeheartedly believe this. My first job, first and foremost, is to raise a crop.
Yeah.
If we raise a crop, the rest of it will take care of itself.
Tell me this, how has that affected your marketing strategy? Did you sell a third, hold a third? What is your, if you don't mind sharing with us.
What we did, we priced the fertilizer and then priced enough corn to pay for that fertilizer.
Ah, brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. I don't know if it's brilliant. It's just what we did. And,
well, you know, the bill will get paid. So. You know, you at least have the money to pay it and can recognize some of those expenses, you know, this year. Cause it's the options to go out, you know, I'm thrilled that you got another combine coming. The fleets of equipment that are out there are very diminished, and farmers may find themselves with money in hand at the end of this year, but if they're thinking about going out and buying a planter, it may not be here next year.
Yeah. No, that is a major issue. Parts are a major issue. Fortunately, we've been able to get everything. Our dealers have taken care of us, but we got big track tractors, and we ordered a set of tracks for one of them. They were getting tired last August.
Yeah.
Not 2 months ago, 14 months ago.
Yeah.
And we ordered up that set of tracks. And we were quite spread out with our operation, so we're on the road enough with these tracks. So we buy the higher grade track, so they live longer. And we ordered them last August. They put them on this July because they finally came in.
Goodness.
That being said, we could have gotten tracks if we were in a machine down situation. We would have gotten tracks, but. You know,
they had to triage what they had. Understandably. Yeah. I get that. Now I know your gleaners are taken care of by the folks mm-hmm. over at Midway. How many years have you been working with Midway?
2004.
Wow. Yeah.
So, Kyle, the owner there, one of the owners there started there. So I have a mechanical engineering degree. I was an engineer up at a little company called Wilridge in Wapiti, North Dakota. And Kyle started at Midway about the same time I started at Wilridge. So we kind of grew up together, quote unquote. He has always just done very good at taking care of us. And yeah, it's been...
He's good people.
Been good.
He really is. Yeah, Wilridge, you know, I worked on some stuff. That was Wilridge equipment, and I want to say it was the heavy. Was it the heavy construction disc harrow? Is that one of the things y'all made?
Yeah, they and I've been out of there 5 years now, so you know I'm. But they built the, what they call the big Wishick disc at that time, and there's a great big. Some of them had 36-inch blades, they were a big outfit. I personally didn't work on that too much. So here's another side note to that. My brother, who's in the combine, was also an engineer up there, and he did work on the Wishick side of things. So.
Now, how does that engineering prowess come to work on the farm these days? I'm sure you've built. What's the most fun thing you've had to build or design yourself to supplement the farm?
I don't even know how to answer that question. A fun thing. I don't know.
Well, I'll give you examples. Years ago, we knew a farmer who had built a air distribution duct system for the top of his Gleaner combine above the cage, and had hooked it up to a leaf blower. And what it would do is it would just create enough air above that system to keep material from finding places to sit up there. And There was promises of 20% gain. Now the only problem is you only had a certain amount of time down the field until the leaf blower's engine explodes. But before that, before that happens, you're doing awesome.
Okay. Some of the things we've done, we took and it's a green piece of equipment, but they build a single disc drill. And we bought a 40-footer on 10-inch spacing. And took it apart, made outer wings, and put it back together as a 60-footer on 15-inch spacing. So we did that. We have a Wilrich built an 80-foot field cultivator.
Yeah.
For a while, we own the number one of those. They built a great big disc ripper thing that we own the number one of those.
Wow.
So that's kind of a throwback into our engineering days. What I will tell you, so this is kind of an offshoot of engineering, whatever.
Yeah.
We own our own tile plow.
Huh.
So we do tiling, drain tile.
Well, and I bet those big old tractors.
It's just a farmer plow. It's mounted to a tractor.
Yeah.
It's not a big Byron or anything like that. But that is probably the most rewarding thing we do on the farm.
Really? Now, do you do it for neighbors and stuff too, or is it just mainly for your own work?
Yeah, we've never hung a sign saying we do it, but then once people know you have the equipment and you're willing to do it, and I don't do huge projects. I don't want to put in 100,000 feet for somebody, but if somebody needs 15,000 feet put in to do some what we call target tiling, we'll do those sorts of things.
That is cool. That is, I'll tell you what, that'll test a tractor, won't it?
Yeah, it's a little scary sometimes. We were pulling in a big main 2 years ago, and our plow is what they call a 6-foot plow, and you can cheat that a little bit. We were probably 6.5 feet pulling in a 10-inch main, and we got several of these big 600 horsepower Caterpillars.
Yeah,
or Challengers, whatever. And mine are old. Mine are more Cat than Challenger. But anyways. We had two of those tractors hooked on that plow, and we had good footing, and we were going to go forward.
Yeah.
It didn't. We were going forward. I just didn't know if the plow was going to come with us, or if the whole plow was going to come with us, or part of the plow was going to come
with us. It was tired.
It
was just going to sit there.
Yeah. We were going forward because we had enough. We had, 1,000 horsepower and 120,000 pounds of tractor on the front of this thing, and yep. We were going forward. That was probably the little. That was a little nerve wracking.
You were digging deep. If you'd gone much deeper, you'd look down and see the people on the other side of the earth.
Right. It was. We were deep. We got through the hill, and the water runs downhill, and yeah. So
when are you going to wrap up for the season?
Go ahead.
When are you going to wrap up?
What's up?
When are you going to wrap up for the season?
We should get done picking. Depending upon if and what breaks, middle of next week.
Yeah, well, that's that'll give you plenty of off season going in to get equipment staged for whatever you want to have fixed or cleaned or done, and get your grain sold that you're going to sell, and all of that, and then be planning your strategies. You know, you've already started with some of it. Be planning your strategies for next year. Anything new next year you're going to try?
Not really. We actually historically have raised a lot of non-GMO soybeans. We sell them into the food grade market and so on and so forth. But this year, we because of the prevent plant and the weed challenges that come with that, we planted more Enlist beans than we have in a long time. We're going to go down that road a little bit more next year, I believe. But no, it's we're just kind of same thing. We make small, subtle changes. You know, it's we farm. And here's a throwback to my engineering days.
Yeah,
we're evolutionary, not revolutionary. Right?
Okay. Subtle individual steps. Because if you change too many things at one time, how do you know which one worked?
Yeah.
You know, you go in and you're like, well, I'm going to change my seed variety. Right. I'm going to change my row spacing, my population, my nutrient program. And it's like, well, it worked, but I'm not sure which one of those things it was. And so there's something to be said for incremental, steady, positive progress.
Right. You know, and the things you know work, continue to do them and do the things you do well, you know. That's kind of one of our things we've taken. If we're good at something, those are the things we do, right? If you're not good at something, don't do that anymore, right? And that seems really basic, but when I go to do custom tiling work for people, the number one thing you got to know when you're tiling is water runs downhill.
you'd know that.
It seems like, it's such an obvious thing, but you'd be amazed at the people that can't wrap their mind around that, right? Like
maybe they have. They just you to do something magical. That's what it is,
right?
I want you to make the water flow uphill.
This isn't rocket surgery.
No, it's not. Andy, I wish you great success and safety and a bountiful conclusion to the harvest with things going on. And thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Anytime. Good visit.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. I know I did. I also hope you'll keep tuning in for more insight, discussion, and maybe a few laughs. And if you'd like to join us on the program and tell us about your harvest, just send us a message by connecting with us on social media. The Harvest Trail Podcast is a production of Agricultural Dealers United and brought to you by some of the best dealers in the business. You can find previous episodes on your favorite podcast platform or at theharvesttrailpodcast.com. The show's produced by Rich Williams, and I'm your host, Jeff Michaels. Until next time, may your bins overflow and the fuel bill stay reasonable. May the bean dust stay on the outside of the cab and the stalk stay out of the tires. And may someone else have to blow out the radiator. Have a great, safe, enjoyable, and bountiful harvest from all of your friends right here at the Harvest Trail Podcast.